We have a beautiful crowd here this morning. Welcome, everybody. Good morning. And let's begin. We are on page 161. I want to make sure. I just realized something. Does everybody have a copy of the new PDF? What I will do is, in case you do not have a copy of the new PDF, I'm going to put it in the Zoom chat right now. Give me 1 second. I forgot Adrian doesn't have WhatsApp, so I never sent it to him. I'll do it right now. Sorry, everybody. Take 2 seconds, and we will start. Okay, there it is. Okay, we are on page 161. And again, if you want a hard copy of the actual book itself, let me know and I will get it to you. Page 161, Devar Harif. Okay, so we've now taken a lot of the principles that we've seen over the last couple of weeks, and we are going to reanalyze them based on this principle of Devar Harif. And how does something which is Harif play into these principles? And as we're going to see, is going to accelerate each one of these principles. And certain principles that we had are going to, shall we say, go by the wayside because of Devar Harif. Now, when we talk about a Devar Harif, the examples of food that we generally assume are food items like the onions, the garlics, radishes, these hot peppers, there is a machlokas over pickles, as well as lemons. Those are the items that we generally understand are Devar Harif, and we do not add to this list. Okay? So, we have said before, there are certain principles when it comes to transmitting taste. For example, you need heat in order to transmit taste. And generally speaking, you have this concept of something which is eino binyomo, the taste is repugnant. It's this gross and disgusting, meaning something which is not a day old, something which is more than a day old, the taste that comes out is usually gross and disgusting. So now we're going to see, and also we saw napanate tera. We saw last week the noodles in the pot. I make noodles in a meat pot. Can I eat these noodles with dairy? So is it lachatchila? Is it just b'di'evet? We're not going to say it's that, even if we hold that it's only okay b'di'evet, we're not going to say you got to throw your noodles when you added the cheese, even though the noodles are made in a meat pot. If you want to hold that the Rama, which says that it is just b'di'evet, we're going to see a lot of these rules are going to be, shall we say, upgraded or enhanced because we're talking about the Devar Harif. So let's begin. Let's take a look at the source for it, which is number 18. It's a Gemara in Chulin that says the following: Amar Chizki Amishum Abaye Hilchasa Tzinon Shechasro Besakin Shechasach Babasar. So I have a radish, and I take a radish and I chatungi, I chop it up. Okay, and yesterday, last night or this morning, or what about 5 days ago? I cut fleshix, I cut meat. So once again, we see our koseach, we see our almost this yogurt type of a dish, which was very common in the times of Chazal. We mentioned why last week or 2 weeks ago, koseach was very common because it was able to, shall we say, remain without refrigeration, and it was somewhat healthy, although probably like 20% fat in terms of the yogurt content, but that's for another time. You know, I did it. So again, I can't eat this radish. I can't dip my radish in yogurt. Why not? It's just shocking. Can you believe it? Here's a radish, a can of radish? Because I cut a radish with a meat knife? Wow. Says the Gemara, I will tell you why. Because this radish absorbed meat from the knife. There's something about this knife, this fleshic knife, that is going to impart flavor into my radish. That will make my radish, shall we say, fleshic. And since my radish is fleshic, I cannot eat it with dairy. Wow. That is wild. Rashi is going to give us two different reasons why is it that this is the case. So Rashi, source 19, he says the following. But this is Rashi on the Gemara, in Chulin. Hilchach dagim she'alu bekara, fishies that you have on a plate. Moto l'cham gosach, you could have it with dairy. Not a problem at all. Elinos in tam abba minos in tam distam kara mekanchim also mishuman akarush ala mishum mius. Not a problem to have this fish with dairy. Not an issue at all. However, when it comes to a sakin, there's going to be a difference. Here we go. Reason number one. Rashi will give us two interpretations, right? And I'm going to spill the beans right now. Warning, spoiler alert. The two reasons that Rashi is going to give for why we're machmir by a sakin, by a knife, we are going to be choshesh for both of them. Number one, what's the reason why we have a knife?
When Rashi says that it's a knife, is it saying that it's a knife or is it saying utensil?
I missed that. A knife or a?
When he says knife, right, he's using the lashon of knife. Is it saying for only knives or any utensil?
Oh, good question. We're good. Well, we're going to answer that in a moment. You ask a very good question. For now, we're going to say knife and only knives. I'll tell you why your question is a great question. Because my fork is very sharp, meaning I can use it to pier and spear things. I wouldn't say a spoon, that's different. But knives have a piercing property to them. So you tell me, let's read Rashi's two interpretations and you tell me, can this apply to other utensils? Can we extrapolate to other utensils? Right? Rashi says sucking. So the question is, what's the property of a sucking that renders a sakin having an ability to transfer taste more readily than other utensils? So here we go. He says, that the fat is karush alav, that sometimes this fat remains on the knife, the eno nicker, and you can't see it. You know, it has like a glossy look to it. When you cut your radish, no sin tam haba min hamamish. All of a sudden, my radish receives the residue, the fat from the knife because of that motion to it. You know, would that happen with a spoon, Uriel? I'm not so sure because when it comes to a spoon, you know, you don't have that same. You're not forcing the same residue onto my radish. Think about it from using a spoon to even just to hold the radish, right? So it could, but you know, whereas when it comes to a knife, you have that insert power. You have that, what's it called? I'm looking for the tension of the blade, right? The physics behind it. The blade is coming and being pierced through. The second reason that it gives, again, the first one was the residue on the knife is going to be what? V'od mishum churfa bala. That because of the charifut, because of this tanginess, the sharpness that exists in the onion, we're talking about a radish with the same idea. Mishum de churfa bala tfei mi dagim haroschim. It is going to absorb much more, right? That much more than in a regular case of hot fish, meaning you're going to have much more of my taste of my knife that was embedded in my knife is going to be imparted to the radish much more so than if I was just cutting hot fish. Remember our hot fish cases, which the Gemara Chulin talked about, we saw last week. Agav de duchta de sakina pali sakina ubalat yom. So here we go. And this is the concept called duchta de sakina, literally the piercing of the knife. English here says pressure. It's the same idea. This pressure, has a very small surface area. And therefore, if I want to cut something, I'm placing tension into it. And because it's very thin, and sharp, it's able to pierce items. Now, my question is, my friends, can we extrapolate to a spoon? Can we extrapolate to a fork? What would you say and why?
Well, a knife just tastes better.
What was that?
A knife just tastes better.
It what do you mean by a knife tastes better?
Nah. Basically, the only reason why I think it's more likely a knife is because, like, you're cutting deep into the any food thing. Like, it's not like a fork where, like, you just, like, prick it or, like, a
spoon. Okay, so that's a really good point. A fork is only going to pierce the top part of a surface area, right? Because once, you know, the prongs of the fork enter into my radish, then I can lift the fork up and have a radish on it, right? Like a lollipop radish, right? Whereas a knife, you're piercing it the entire way. So you have much more surface pressure that is going to definitely come in contact with the radish itself. Okay, so let's hold on to answering this for now. And we'll see if, I don't know if by the end of today, but the end of maybe this week, we'll be able to extrapolate and reach a conclusion. But it's an excellent question. But definitely a spoon, there's no question about it. The spoon is going to have neither one of these properties. A spoon, we're not worried about the fat getting onto our radish because it's just touching it in a very loose way. And two, you don't have piercing with the spoon. The fork, especially the forks that we use today, those can be pretty sharp. I can jab you, and it could definitely hurt. Okay. Obviously, the nafkamina between these two reasons of Rashi would be if I know for sure that my knife is very clean, right? If I just took out the dishwasher, take my knife out of the dishwasher, I don't have to worry that there was any residue on there. Rashi's second reason is going to be like, there's nothing you can do to clean this knife. It's always going to have this property because of the duchta de sakina.
If residue is the main reason why we wouldn't be allowed to use it, then what's the difference between the
sakina? Okay, how do you know it's the main reason?
Sounds like, according to Rashi, second reason then, or first reason.
So that's the Shulchan Aruch. Mishnah, good point. Say the Shulchan Aruch is verse 30. Look at the language that he uses. Sinona silka she chascham besakin shabasar ben yomo. So if I cut a radish with a knife, that is ben yomo, meaning it was used for in the last 24 hours. Oh, she eino mekunach. Or that wasn't wiped, you see? Or you can't eat it with chalav. I can't eat this radish with dairy. So it's interesting, huh? Look at the language. In fact, the Bir Hagra in number 21 says, "Who kishnei tamim sharashi sham," that the Bir Hagra mentions that I'm going to be the Shulchan Aruch is choshesh for both reasons. It's not. It's either. One of these two reasons will cause my radish to be forbidden to be eaten with dairy. And it doesn't appear that he gives more weight to one or the other. But Uriel, you mentioned a very good point that in theory, what about if I remove one of the reasons? Okay, we still have the second reason, which is duchta de sakina, that has bechoshesh for. So, not going to help so much. Okay. Now what we're going to do is we're now going to go through each concept that we've already encountered over the last couple of weeks and see how a davar charif impacts these cases. So the first one is I'm now cutting a radish with a knife, which is eino ben yomo. So again, if this was an eino ben yomo pot, so again, we have three concepts here that we have to play with. We have an eino ben yomo, which we're generally more lenient on. Again, if I were to take meat, cook it in a dairy pot that was eino ben yomo, my food is going to be okay. I'll have to kasher my pot, but my food is saved. That's what we saw 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, right? Right. Second, we also, why, let me explain why. Again, just to reiterate, there's an eino ben yomo pot, since it hasn't been used for a few days, therefore, we see that the taste that it imparts is actually considered in less than ideal less than ideal taste, a repugnant taste, a gross taste, and therefore it's not an issue. Okay. So if you take a look, yeah, Rivka points out, which I did not see at all, thank you. If you take a look, everybody, in Source 13 in the footnote, look at that. He talks about a fork. Some parts can hold the same applies to a fork as well because of the pressure. Okay. So there we go. That's exactly the case, right? That's why I was being very uncommittal, because it actually is a machlokes. It is a machlokes if a fork does apply, similar to a knife. I wanted to play the game, and you were to tell me, but there you go. Thank you very much for pointing that out. I did not actually check the footnote, so that's great. Okay. It's actually the okay. I'll mention it now. I'll spill the beans now, only because why not? There is another reason to be lenient by using a fork that you mentioned. It doesn't pierce the whole way, only the surface area, in which case we're less likely that the taste is going to impart. And it could be that those who argue that specifically, what's the definition of duchta de sakina? The definition of duchta de sakina, the pressure of a knife, is not just, you know, think about it from a physics perspective. The pressure of the knife is me taking the knife and completing the cut, right? Or even going halfway or through, but for sure completing the cut, there's that pressure. When the knife hits the ground, hits your cutting board, you hear that whack, right? It might be, in order to have this duchta de sakina, you need, especially the second reason, you need to have that full pressure system. That is going to be absent in the fork. If you think about it, a fork, well, it penetrates just the surface, penetrates, I don't even know if it goes in an entire inch, right? Maybe half an inch, just a couple of centimeters into often the top of one's radish. And therefore, it could be that to have what's called a duchta de sakina, the language of the pressure of the knife, which is going to be piercing your radish, you're going to need pressure in its totality. But and think about it. To have your knife just cut the top part of your radish, right? It requires very little pressure, very little strength. Right, you don't need to be working out in the fields. You don't need to be, you know, a basadeh, to be a, you know, we're mentioning, you know, Yoel's pythons that he has for his arms with the tank top that we don't want to see. Thank you for not giving us their camera. What?
I don't know if they're pythons.
Okay, whatever they are. So it's rare. If you ever, you don't have this because you don't have kids. But then sometimes, you know, my younger kids, like, they can cut it, but they can only cut items halfway. It requires sometimes a different strength to complete that cut, right? An extra oomph, an extra koach, and make sure you have your kafia already to sometimes cut things. And therefore, you could understand why, from a physics perspective, it's very possible that from a physics perspective, the rules that were to govern a fork would be very different than a knife. If we're talking about a duchta sakina, a knife is a knife is a knife, right? The piercing of the knife, the depth of the piercing of the knife is going to be far greater than a fork. It's really a phenomenal, excellent question. And that's why the Darche Tshuva is giving a supa. Could be in doubt about it. And the general prevailing halachic world is that we're mako by forks. Unless you mamish, like, you know, jabbed it or pierced it or went for it to be leading. Okay, that was a very long-winded answer. It's a great question because, again, it really, you have to understand the principles behind it. So it was kedai to go on a tangent because it'll give us a greater understanding of our principles at hand. Okay, here we go. Let's go to an Ein Binyamin knife. So I now have an Ein Binyamin knife, and I'm now cutting. So the source for this, believe it or not, is not... it is not basar v'chalav, but rather avodah zarah food, non-kosher food. Source 22 is a Mishnah. Elu dvarim shel de kochavim. Asurim ve'en asurim isur hana. We have a very interesting principle. Generally speaking, you're not allowed to benefit from avodah zarah. You're not allowed to get any hana from avodah zarah. That you're not allowed to do. But you are allowed to benefit from non-kosher food. Although the Shach, I believe it's the Shach, on non-kosher food does mention that one should not, as your full-time job in Parnassah, make money on non-kosher food. Meaning you not be allowed to own a non-kosher business. but you're allowed to benefit from it every so often. Like, you know, you can buy food and give it to your non-kosher. You don't have to buy kosher food for your dog or for your cat. Although now it's very in to get chicks. I don't know. Our friends got chicks the other day. They're, I guess it's like a corona thing. I don't know. Very strange. But here we go. Says the Mishnah. These things are asur. You're not allowed to eat them, but there's no isur hana. You have to benefit from them. Meaning I can sell them. I can give them to my dog. I could use them for whatever purpose. The koret shall... The koret? I don't know how to pronounce it. Koret shall chalotit. So here we go. What are these things? The example that he gives here is your a sliver, a very small piece of chalasis. So it's a chalasis. What is a chalasis? Some type of vegetable, some type of herb of some sort that's obviously going to be very sharp. Unclear what would be translated in the modern era, so we're going to leave it untranslated for now. Some type of spice. Says the Gemara. The Kurichal Hashis, my time, what's the reason why a little bit of this herb is forbidden? Ah, Mishu de Masrile Visakina. I'll tell you why. A nut, because it was cut, you know, it was chopped with a knife. It was a vegetable, right? So it was chopped with a knife. Avagav de Amar Mar no Saint Tamlif Gamutter. Generally speaking, we have a principle that something which imparts taste, lifgam, is permissible. Because it's been more than a day. So if I have a non-kosher knife, my knife is used, and I think I used the same example a couple weeks ago. I have a knife that I use to cut hot treif meat, hot non-kosher meat, right? I cut it, I use the knife for it. If I take that knife 2 days later and cut vegetables, those vegetables, believe it or not, would be permitted, right? It's probably they're only permitted b'di'evet, although they could be also l'chadchila permitted, which I'll explain in a second. The reason is because any of the hot meat that went into my knife is not been yama. Oh, actually, sorry. And yeah, it's even though it's not been yama. And therefore, since it's not been yomo, I would be the taste that it imparts is no good. And the second part that I wanted to mention, why for vegetables you'd generally be allowed to, is because we actually say when you chop vegetables, you chop many vegetables. So unless you get the first one or the second vegetable of the from the produce store, any residue that would have been remained on your knife would have already disappeared and would have been imparted to the first few vegetables that it cut. So you don't know, and it's a suffix. You're in doubt which vegetable you got. You probably did not get, you know, the first couple, in which case there's a lot more room to be dinim. Okay. But says the Gemara, we have a problem. Why? Because this chalasis, whatever, and this is, you know, whatever this item is going to be spicy. It's going to be considered devar harif. And says the Gemara, Ava gavda mar mar nos. Again, generally speaking, we hold, because why is it asur? We hold in osatam nifkam is mutter. Agav chorfa de chalsisa. The asr. Oh, all of a sudden we see that something spicy upgrades in eno ben yomo to a ben yomo. That because there was something spicy, this is considered devar harif. Usually we say whatever the knife cuts, it's going to make it an eno ben yomo. The taste from an eno ben yomo knife going into an item is gross, it's disgusting, and therefore be okay to eat. But here the Gemara says, sandwich is harif, your chalasis, and again, I'm not sure what that is, so let's use the word onion, because, or radish, your onion and your radish have an ability to transform a knife, which is eino ben yomo, to a ben yomo. Okay, we see here, that is the first principle of devar harif. It upgrades items to an Benyamin. Now, full disclosure, what are we talking about? We're talking about a knife. Now, here's what's interesting. I have two principles coming together. I have a principle of a knife, which is called Duchta de Sakina, and I have a principle of Devar Harif. Do I need to have both in combo to upgrade to a Benyamin? What about if I only had a knife and not the Devar Harif? Well, as I kind of said a minute ago, that wouldn't do it. So you see, you need both. You need the item called the knife, which is this piercing, this sharp piercing, which almost takes whatever's inside the knife and kind of imparts it. But it can only do that in tandem, in partnership with a Devar Harif. When you have those two things together, it transforms something which is usually considered to be no sin tam lifgam to no sin tam l'shevach and would make it asr. Okay? Wow, I just looked at the clock and I see it's 6:58. Okay, let's just see this in halacha very quickly. We won't read word for word. Number 24, the Beis Yosef. In his commentary, quotes a Sefer Truma, and he says exactly what we kind of basically imply, which because we saw it in the Gemara, something which is not binyomo, Devar Harif, with a sakin, with a knife, upgrades it to a nosen tam l'shvach, and makes it aser. Now, here's a question. There's going to be a Maharam. You see the middle of 24? I'm going to end with this because we're going to continue tomorrow. Says the Maharam, stop. Do not extrapolate. This is the laws. And specifically, this refers to a chiltit and only a chiltit. Just because the Gemara talks about a chiltit, which might be harif, doesn't necessarily mean I can extrapolate to other spicy items. Okay? And that's this Maharam that the Beit Yosef quotes in Mil 24. Ram says, Davka v'kur shel chalatit armina d'chorfa mashver d'shevach v'lo mishum d'var acher. And therefore, we can't extrapolate. So, the question is, because the Gemara uses an example of what's called a d'var harif, a chiltit, does that mean that every d'var harif has this principle? The Maharam questions and says, no, don't extrapolate. It's a chiltit or a chiltit, meaning it's an X. We don't know what an X is. So maybe we cannot extrapolate. Okay, this is going to lead to a very interesting halacha, which is brought down Shulchan Aruch in 25. How we paskin and ramifications are going to be very interesting. But I got bad news. We're going to be machmer. But let's see it inside in Mirza Hashem tomorrow. Now we've seen the principles. Now let's see the halachic implications. But you have to come back 23 and a half hours from now. Have a wonderful day, everybody. Wonderful to see. This is an incredible crowd. Beautiful. Oh, yeah. This crowd spans many areas of the city of Toronto, many different neighborhoods. A special shout out to Rivka, who's representing, you know, all women. I'm which is beautiful.
Also in the room, I'm just saying.
What was that? Was that you?
Ami Shields is also in the room.
Ami Shields?
Yeah, I'm just saying.
How are you, Rabbi?
Ami Shields. Ami, yeah. He's a shield. He's a magain. He protects the people. Wow. Oh, you guys are traveling in a vehicle heading towards the fields. Planting. Yeah. You know what's amazing about your job? You're preparing to one day, when Mashiach comes, you're going to have to enhance the land of Israel. So you're preparing now in Chutz Aretz what it'll mean to beautify Eretz Yisrael. So this is an incredible thing, the job that you have.
I'm
saying, you're going to know how to plant. You're going to know how to, you know, make gardens and beautify the land of Israel. It's a big mitzvah.
All right, Rabbi.
We're okay. Gonna see all right. You later. Who works at 7 in the morning? I love it. Love it. Have a good day, everybody.